Hello, and welcome to episode 46 of Spellcast. I'm your host, Courtney, and this is my co-host, Andreelle.
Greetings, friends. Today, we are talking about the ever-so-lovely Sabbat of Beltane.
Yes, we are very excited to talk about it. It is coming up really soon, when we're recording this anyway. So, it starts on May 1st, and you can celebrate on that day, but it's a Wednesday this year, so it might be a little hard.
The good thing about sabbatical celebration is that usually it is, you can celebrate it throughout the entire week. I even have friends, one of my dear friends who is also a witch, she sometimes waits for the weather to tell her when to celebrate it, so sometimes it can be literally 10 days, or even a little bit before May 1st. Some people celebrate Valpurgis or Valpurg, which is usually the night before April 30th. That's the more Norse neo-paganism that kind of mixes with these things. And there are many secular adaptations of this holiday as well. Evidently, this one has been very popular throughout the years.
Yes, this is one of my favorite Sabbats as well.
Well, this seems to be one of the more one of the more successful times in which we have a Sabbath. I mean, our coven in particular is very, we seem to have fun with this one. A lot of things get done with this one.
And Yule.
And Samhain was really successful. But yeah, this has been the very consistent one. We're still trying to find better ways to celebrate Lammas or Lunasa. Usually yes. We're at Pensac that time, and a lot tends to happen then, so it's hard to sit down, but one day we'll organize something a little bit better with that. And we also celebrate a bunch of other holidays that are outside of the eight numbered Sabbat wheel of the year.
Yes, and Beltane was one of the first we celebrated, so it probably has a sentimental value attached to it as well. This year, we're going to be celebrating it on Sunday, May 5th. May 4th,
well, we're celebrating it on the Wednesday. We're doing a small ritual that night. But yeah, no, the big all-day bash is definitely on May 5th.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So I was going to say that Andrea has a performance on May 4th, so we can't do it on the Saturday.
That is also my
And
birthday.
I was going to say that we were going to celebrate it on Wednesday, but the party is going to be on Sunday. The big all-day party, like you said. Mm-hmm. So what we like to do is, the reason Wednesday is difficult is because we work mundane jobs that go until 6. So we can't do the all-day celebration like we'd like, but we can do dinner, and that'll work, and that'll be very nice. But on Sunday, we're going to do our all-day celebration. So for us, Beltane goes from sunrise to sunset pretty much and past that. We are going to be doing it at Ignatius's house because he has a nice big space for it. And in the morning, we'll get there, we'll decorate, we'll set up our space. We garden during the day, and then we usually have a potluck dinner with a bunch of friends. Whether they're in the coven or not, we invite everyone, whether they've celebrated or not, if they are Wiccan or pagan or whatever religion they are, like Andrea was saying, Beltane is even secular. You might know it as May Day, and the Maypole is pretty popular. It's something that a lot of people do.
Well, May Day was also kind of Judeo-Christian Catholic.
Right, that's what I'm saying. People probably know it as that because it happens to be the thing that, I don't know, I feel like it goes from like pagan to Christian to secular.
Yeah, and then kind of just making circle way back.
Yeah.
I noticed a lot of, I think there's something called Beltania that happens in, I want to say, Colorado. That's an interesting secular version of the holiday. And Beltane also still happens in secular parts of England.
Yes. Yeah. And it's a really big celebration. I feel like what we celebrate kind of goes along with what the world celebrates in general. Like, whether you're religious or not, I feel like a lot of people do May Day. They'll do a Halloween so-and sort of thing. And they also do something around Christmas. And they come up with their own, versions of it. But I think that those holidays are the biggest ones that get people together because you're celebrating different points of the year. And in summer too, people will have barbecues, and that might center around different points in the summer. So it might be more like a 4th of July thing is what people are big for. It might be, a summer Sabbath. It might be something else, but there's usually a big party in the summer. Beltane is the big spring party, Soen is the big fall party, and then Yule is the big winter party. So I think humans just like an excuse to party. And so whether you're religious or not, you'll find one and you'll be like, yep, I just want to have some fun and celebrate the season, celebrate being with family and friends.
Just come eat, drink, and do something different for merry. Once.
Yeah. And so, again, open invitation for anybody that is on Long Island. I know I got a couple people on Facebook, but if you're a new listener or a listener that isn't in the group yet, so I might not know where you're from. If you are from Long Island, you are more than welcome to come. So just reach out to us. Let us know. We'll get you set up. And then hopefully 1 year we will have the capacity to invite people from out of state and make it like a really big celebration. That would be awesome. So another thing that we like to do on Beltane, or that I like to do, is I like to make the flower crowns because they're a lot of fun.
The laurel, the crowns of laurel. For those of you who've known us or who have seen our faces.
Yes, and it's on Facebook. It's actually the picture from last year's Beltane is still my profile picture on Facebook.
You got lazy.
What?
You got lazy.
No, I like the picture. It's cute because it's us with flower crowns. And I can't wait to make new ones this year. I'm going to see what I'm going to make them out of because my daffodils are already starting to wilt. So there goes my plan on that one. Because I like using daffodils in them.
Well, I mean, well, Ignatius has that entire tree that's loaded with the flowers, if you recall.
Yeah, the white ones are a little hard to string.
Well, there's a ton of them.
I know, but
they
fall apart easy.
But there's a ton of them.
Well, that was my point, is I couldn't really use them last year either because they fell apart really easy. So I'll figure it out.
I thought the crown stayed together decently.
It did, just not the white part.
Yeah, well.
The white flower part. The red part did, because we had those red flowers. Those were good. So I might wind up going to a florist, which is kind of outside what you're supposed to do, because you're supposed to find what's naturally there. Or it might just wind up being a couple leaves and flowers, because he has the nice, like, Japanese maple. So we'll see how I wind up working that out. I also have my cherry tree is starting to bloom. So if the cherry flowers
the cherries
hold up
before the ants get inside. You literally have 1 day to get the cherries.
Well, we're supposed to spray the tree with like an all natural thing that keeps the ants off, but we just never get around to it. Yeah. So anyway, I'll find out my flowers. And hopefully whatever. They'll turn out well. But yeah, I like making flower crowns. I like decorating with, you know, different streamers and flowers and natural things, and I'll set up the deck in the backyard really nice. The boys seem to be really focused on the dinner and ritual aspect, so it's good because we all focus on something else. So
also
me, I'm
focused
making
on the gardening aspect. I mean,
and that's that too. But yeah, I like the decoration
part.
I get
my son. That's the first amount of sun I get. First day of working outside with a shirt off that, yes, I get for the year.
So we're gonna have to split between Ignatius's garden and my own. Mine needs just cleaning up and stuff. I have a few invasive plants. And no real...
You also have an invasive dog that eats everything.
I do. She eats all my raspberries, and that's rude. And then she likes to sit under my horseradish plant for shade, which is adorable. But she'll just, like, scoot herself in there, dig a little tiny bit of, like, a hole-ish thing to sit in, and then be like, this is nice. And I'm like, okay.
A hole-ish thing?
Well, because it's not a hole. Like, I don't want to say she digs a hole, because she's not, like, a mold that she's like in it, but she digs like a little bed. It's almost just like a indent, and then she just lays herself in it, and then that's it. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm glad that you found some relief from the sun, but this is in the middle of my garden.
Doofy beagle.
I know. Yes, anyone that has a beagle knows. Ashley knows. From our coven, she also has a doofy beagle, and they're the best, but they're also weird. So my garden needs maybe a little bit of rearranging, and while we do have deer, if I put up walls, it will be because of my dog, because I haven't had any problems with deer because I have a pretty large fence around my whole yard. Yes, and I definitely have to protect certain things because I have certain plants in there that I don't want her to get near. And if ever in the future, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to plant animal, like non-animal safe like plants, because I have a dog. So anyway, we're going to work on our gardens. I like doing always like the dessert end of things with our feast. So I'm going to be doing our Beltane bread, which is kind of like a sweetened bread. You can have it with dinner, but since it's a bit of a sweet bread, it's also good for a dessert. It's a lot of fun to make, and it came out really nice last year, so I'm excited to do it again.
Yes, we're going to have that, and we're going, one of our other friends wanted to bake, so she's going to bring sabbat cakes.
Yes.
which is a standard recipe. If you read any, there are so many different recipes.
Yeah, I'm sure we've talked about them before.
Yeah, Scott Cunningham had a recipe. Lucy Summers has a recipe.
I'm pretty sure goddessandgreenman.co.uk has one too. They have a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, there's so many like alternatives. Just honey, oats, a little bit of wine. Some people use red. Some people use white. I think red is probably a little better for certain symbolism, but white is obviously better
for taste.
Yeah, things that'll be sweet. I mean, for those of you who know me, Moscato d'Asti is my favorite wine. It's probably the sweetest, but the richest, sweetest wine that you'll ever have. It's rich, sweet, as opposed to pungently sweet, like dessert wine.
Yeah.
Like, let's say, a bottle of Aphrodite.
Yes, which is also good.
It's really interesting. They called that one Aphrodite, but Venus was more the god of the vine, but you know, I guess they missed the mark with that one.
Well, it's probably just because she's the goddess of love, and they're like, wine, love, do the thing.
Or maybe it's just Greek people who own the company, and they're like, ah, Romans, this is Greek.
They copied us.
Even though Venus was different before the history elided, but not everyone knows that. So I suppose, yes, so we've covered what it is a little bit we're celebrating. And some of the things that we do. Now, we're going to go over other things that we do personally as we go through some of the actual reference points that we have. Now, for today, we will be referencing one of the Lulins collection of eight. I'm pretty sure many of you have seen them before if you've gone into any sort of pagan or witchcraft-related
section.
Even Barnes
& Noble they're in.
Yes, it's the whole section where you see like the eight Sabbaths of the year, and there are those tiny Lulin books that are different colors. We're reading from the Green Book of Beltane. We're mostly referencing that because it's a very comprehensive guide that we feel that we can translate any mishaps for you very easily. We are also referencing a few computer sources. Yes.
Oh, man. Vegan?
Sorry, yeah, okay? My eye is just slightly itchy.
Nice, because that's something they need to know.
we need to have some sort of explanation for the brief moment of duh.
Just shows you how well I edit things.
But yes, so.
You may begin, sir.
Beltane is, of course, the midway point between the spring equinox and the summer solstice, between Ostara and Letha. It is the most temperate and celebrated in a way that kind of encompasses literally quite the mediums of spring and summer, in the sense that there is still an innocence, a budding beginning, new things to be had, but with more of an intensity, a little more lust is in this holiday. A little bit more coming fire. It's when the fire is just built, where the shooting power of just starting a flame has begun. Whereas midsummer is that flame burning to its zenith. So if you look up the symbology that surrounds that sort of poetic expression.
Yes, and there's the poetic expression of the goddess and the green man and them beginning on their journey. I'm sure we've talked about it before in our winter holidays. So that's like the end of their relationship, so to speak. And this is more where everything starts. So on May Eve, the sexuality of life and the earth is at its peak. Abundant fertility on all levels is the central theme. The maiden goddess has reached her fullness. She is the manifestation of growth and renewal. Flora, the goddess of spring, the May Queen, the May Bride. The young Oak King, as the Green Man, falls in love with her and wins her hand.
Well, sometimes Kernanos, too.
Or Kernanos, yeah. Well, just in this
just
particular...
In this particular instance that you were reading.
Yeah.
This I understand. There's plenty of ways that there are interchangeable legends all over the place with this time.
Yeah, yeah,
just
yeah. There's different legends in folklore, for
sure. Though
we're
not preaching one particular...
not at all. It's just representing, like, in general, the idea of a male and feminine aspect coming together. And the union is consummated and the May Queen becomes pregnant. Together, the May Queen and the May King are symbols of the sacred marriage, the union of earth and sky, and this union has merely been reenacted by humans throughout the centuries. So this is the night of the Greenwood marriage. It's about sexuality, sensuality, passion, vitality, and joy, and about conception. A brilliant moment in the wheel of the year to bring ideas, hopes, and dreams into action and to have some fun. Now, you can, during Beltane, there's a tradition of getting married for a year and a day.
Oh, yes. I was going to reference that. The year and the day.
Now, the only thing that bothers me with that is it, if this is about, like, fertility and conception, if you have a child, you can't just be like, peace out, bro, like a year later.
Well, I suppose theoretically by the letter of the contract, you can. I suppose you could be like a bear and just, like, keep, like, knocking somebody up until a baby comes out and then you walk away.
But, like, what do you do with the kid? Because... Oh, yeah, and by the way, you can't knock someone up until they get pregnant. That's the act of getting pregnant. But I want to know what you're going to do with this child.
I don't know. Just
maybe I know what you meant.
Maybe go Roman and just, I don't know, just blast it into the brick wall. I don't...
You mean throw it over a brick wall?
Don't they threw... They, like, took him, like, head...
They, like, they took threw him by, over the wall,
no,
yeah.
No, sometimes they took him by the legs and they, like, just kind of... Like, oh. Like a cartoon, they would just bash their head really? Into the wall. Yeah, that was a thing.
Too. I feel like, maybe I've seen that. But
the Romans
did
a lot of things with kids.
Well, usually, though, it was if the baby was deformed. They're not going to do that to a perfectly healthy baby. They're just going to be like, oh my God, you have a slight deformity or a mole that you're kissed by the devil? Bye.
Oh, yeah, kissed by the devil.
Well, that's more of a medieval thing in Europe.
No, I mean,
Rome didn't really have like a devil.
Well, I mean, how many things with blemish? You hear that phrase in the Bible?
Oh yeah, no.
I mean, granted, that was a translation during the medieval time, so that might just be proving your point.
I'm just saying the devil part is not the Roman thing. I wanted to just make that like clear and correct myself. Is like if they're saying you're kissed by the devil, it's like a medieval Europe thing. Yeah. If it's just, oh, look, your face looks a little wonky, bye. It's, like, messed up. Or, like, your arm is weird or, like, any deformity. Literally any deformity that is perfectly normal or perfectly fine is just, see you later, kid. And it's like, how, what?
See, now I'm just imagining Emperor Nero just jumping off a brick wall and pile driving a baby.
Oh, my God, no.
That's the first thing that came to my mind.
And what's ridiculous is that's still tame, I'm sure, compared to what they actually did and to how blasé they were about just killing children, which is messed up.
I don't know. Maybe not blasé. I'd probably say a bit more cavalier. It would probably be more okay. of a poetic word to describe that.
Fine. Either way, they didn't really seem to care, so...
Stoically cavalier.
It's messed up. But yeah, I mean, I just want
to
know...
Pretty sure they just quoted Seneca as an excuse to kill enough. A baby. It's just, what is life? You know, like... Like the stoicism.
Oh my God. Yeah, just unfeeling...
It's like, we're saving them. It's like, shut the fuck.
You are not. And just so you know, that's why a lot of mythology, like Greek Roman mythology stories, have these abandoned children coming back as demigods or gods or heroes, because it's so weird. It's still in the culture, yet the artistic culture says that's messed up. They're going to come back to haunt you and kill you and just like, or they're going to come back to be heroes and you're going to be like, oh, that's my kid that I abandoned to a bear and then the bear suckled the thing and now it's a hero. Oh, well, I mean, oops.
Well, that's Romulus and Remus.
That's what I'm saying. They abandon these children and then they come back.
The entire whole of Rome was created. I don't know. I think that there was some sublimated.
Their parents must feel like real pieces of shit because they were like, oh, abandon them to this wolf. And then they're like, oh, you didn't get eaten and die.
Some people also think by translation, I think I said this in a previous episode, that Romulus and Remus, like she-wolf was actually also a term to describe a prostitute.
Oh, that's right.
So they could have just been raised by some...
Well, either way, they were undesirable. Like,
very, very nice prostitute.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm sure their mother was very nice, whether she was a human or an actual wolf. And you know what?
Maybe she was a werewolf. Maybe she was a prostitute by day and she, like, mauled werewolf the people by night. You know, maybe there was, like, this moral
thing. Wait, that's the worst time to be a prostitute is during the day. Wouldn't you get better clients at night?
No, not back then.
Because it's more secretive.
No, but people really didn't give a crap about prostitution in certain places.
I mean,
places
that's fair. But I just figured men have business during the day, so they'd be freer at night.
I don't know. I'm just thinking of, like...
I mean, you can't be a werewolf during the day either, so I guess there's no real good choice.
Selling to a minimum. Yeah. That was a few minutes. So, why don't we get back to the correspondences? Were you reading something in particular, or were you done with that particular excerpt?
Well, I was looking at goddessandgreenman.co.uk. I've used that website before. They have a lot of good information, and I think their stuff is very concise and well laid out. So anyone that's new to it, or you just want to look at a different perspective, they do have more of it seems like that Wiccan belief, because they do use the goddess in Green Man, which is like a Wiccan version of them.
The adaptation was primarily adopted by Wiccans. The Green Man predates Wicca.
Yeah, it's like Celtic, and then, you know, they kind of go into, they blend a lot of different beliefs. So the word Beltane actually originates from the Celtic god Bel, meaning the bright one, and the Gaelic word Tane, meaning fire. So together they make bright fire or goodly fire. And traditionally bonfires were lit to honor the sun and encourage the support of Bel and the sun's light to nurture the emerging future harvest and protect the community. Which is interesting, because I feel Celtic traditions involved bonfires a lot. Now I'm assuming it's just a way to get people together. It's a lot of fun, you know, and it's just an excuse to light up the night with your party. So Bel had to be won over through human effort. Traditionally, all fires in the community were put out and a special fire was kindled for Beltane. This was, oh no, this is a Celtic word, help me.
Teenigan?
Teenigan? Okay.
Well, cool. Yeah, because all the Germanic rules don't necessarily apply to Celtic.
Nothing applies to Celtic. Gotcha. Yeah. That's what I need help. Anyway, so there's special fire.
Just say something with a Dublin or a Belfast accent, and
they're special. Fire.
That was totally incorrect.
Yes. Not PC. People jump the fire to purify, cleanse, and bring fertility. Couples jump the fire together to pledge themselves to each other. Cattle and other animals were driven through the smoke as a protection from disease and to bring fertility. At the end of the evening, the villagers would take some of the Teenigan. That's my best guess.
Teenigan.
All right.
Yeah, Teenigan. I don't think the E before I thing that I stated for Germanic language in a previous episode, I'm pretty sure it doesn't apply to Celtic.
Okay, I was just guessing Ein because like Tain, like the Tain part, I could see it's from Tain, you know? Anyway, whatever. Teenigan, to start their fires anew. And again, like we said, there's a lot of hand fastings during this time. There's the temporary marriage, but there's also permanent marriages that people have.
If you did a temporary marriage during Beltane, the year and the day, the idea is that you would get married at Beltane that next year if you should decide to continue to be married.
Oh, yeah, you can decide to be together. You don't have to leave each other.
Another tradition of this is that if you're not deciding to be married by that time, is that you should go your separate ways. That it's also a time for breakup.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you want to hit someone with a stone cold stunner, you know, go ahead.
Oh, my God.
Make sure they're drinking a beer first.
Uh-huh. So hand fasting comes from the symbolism of tying your hands together with a red ribbon to symbolize that people have come together. And untying means that they remain together of their own free will, so that you're not literally bound to somebody, which is nice.
Temporary bonds.
Yes. Another common element is jumping the broomstick. That goes back to a time when two people who could not afford a church ceremony or want one would be accepted in the community as a married couple if they literally jumped over a broom laid on the floor. The broom marked a threshold, moving from an old life to a new one. Mead and cakes are often shared in the community as part of the ceremony. Mead is known as the brew of the divine, made from the honey, which is appropriate for a love ceremony and the oldest alcoholic drink known to mankind, even predating beer, which is cool.
I love mead.
Mead is really good.
And most people don't know about it.
I know. It's so sad. It's really sweet. It's good. I mean, it's good for people that don't like alcohol, like the taste of alcohol. Because it just tastes like honey and then whatever else you put with it.
Could be like some of those like religious like missionaries that like go to your door, but I'm just talking about mead. It's like, can I talk to you about the sweet nectar that is mead? Have you tried it? Oh, you haven't tried it?
I think people would be less upset if you came to their house with alcohol than a message from a god.
Fair enough.
Right?
Okay. Oh.
So
you'd be like, I mean, is that what you said? I mean, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
No, we're good.
Sorry. I just wanted to clarify something. I didn't know if she said something that needed to be censored.
Nah.
Okay.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm not the problem here.
I just heard a different word in my head. The people in our area use colloquially that might not be received well over this podcast.
Interesting. The Maypole is also very popular. We were talking about that before.
Well, I was going to talk more about the correspondences before I got deeper into the Maypole.
Oh, sorry.
That's why I have the...
No worries.
Yeah, sorry. I know you're talking about certain legends. I probably should have told each other before we started talking. But we're on a time frame, folks. We start this at... Page 181. We're going to work little bits of all around. I figured it would make more sense.
In the Beltane book, yeah.
Yes. So, this will be referencing 181, starting right there, and we'll be moving forward. The spiritual focus in the keywords, again, reference from the Llewellyn's Beltane book. Actually, you know, who was this edited by? I think it was edited by a bunch of people. They never really put authors on this, unless I'm literally looking right through it. The spiritual focus and the key words here are abundance. You know, all holidays are about abundance, but these in particular, creation, fertility, growth, love, psychic ability, purification, sexuality, both from a romantic and a lustful sense, and union. The magical focuses are, once again, abundance, cooperation. So, this is a time to do some tag team spells.
Yeah, work together, people.
Not to down any solitaries out there. I mean, you know, we all start out solitary in some sort of way, especially in this day and age.
And I'm sure working with the deity counts as teamwork.
Yes. Fertility, as referenced by the Maypole, in which we will talk about again. Steady growth, love, manifestation, passion. A time to kind of take the little seeds that you planted at Ostara and to let them kind of resonate and grow in passion, get to the next level. The second evolution in the tri-evolution of you know, like starter Pokemon.
Nice.
There are protection spells, purification, and union. It's also about bringing certain things into the light, whereas like the other holidays of the year, like the darker holidays of the year, are about searching more things that end in, you know, the dark night of the soul, you know, the noticing the darker sides of yourself, the darker sides of your subconscious and unconscious. This is more about these things being brought into the light from those previous times and actually allowing them to resonate and you transcend yourself.
Sorry, it's more about starting the light, and then when you get into autumn and stuff, it's more about trying to preserve it and keep yourself safe. So this is about starting it. There's a lot of, again, that bright, happy energy surrounding everything.
We're also coming into the midway point between the element of air and the element of fire, you know, the masculine elements evolving. You know, spring is air, summer fire, autumn is water. One of my favorite season. And winter is earth. So you can work with energies that surround those particular elements or the characteristics and correspondence of those particular elements. It's leading more towards fire because we're leading more towards summer. And obviously, as referenced by my lovely co-host, that the Beltane, the building of the sacred fires, truth be told, as for a lot of us, because of the weather, it's actually one of the first times we can start a fire very comfortably. This will be our first fire of the year. We haven't really been able to get outside, and the weather's been far too fluctuating.
Which is ironic, because fires are meant to keep you warm, yet in the winter it's really hard to do that and have one outside and kind of hang out.
Yes. Making offerings to particular entities. It's very much a giving time. Hand fastings, protecting plants, animals, people, and possessions. This one I like in particular because this one's actually a little more specific. I know some, if you listen to this without a knowledge of, and foundation of understanding correspondences and the context of where words come from. Now, obviously, any element can have to do with abundance, but it's understanding what type of abundance, you know, how these things go. I think this is the reason why a lot of people misunderstand how zodiac signs work, how certain magic works, how certain spirituality works, is that they take the word at face value in every one of these elements. And we'll probably do a philosophical discussion in a later episode about this. But this is the big thing that I'd like you all to keep in mind. A lot of people will reference the Freuer effect, which is that, oh, people are more likely to believe things that are tailored to something that they believe in or something that has to do with them. This While it may have an effect, we cannot ever truly exclude that. So always have checks and balances with your own mind. Really understanding the symbolism and the foundation of all this and how far these things go back in antiquity is the way to make logical deduction and emotional deduction and how they all of these things go together. You know, while Earth signs may be similar, the context of what one Earth sign may do may be very different than the other one.
I can back that up because as a Virgo, I'm very different than a lot of Virgos, but that also has to do with other things in my chart. It also has to do with me personally, and we can't also exclude, you know, the way that you're brought up. So there's, you know, nature versus nurture. So my nature may be inclined to a certain way, but then that also kind of goes along with how I was nurtured and how that either brings out certain things in my personality or would dampen them or cause me to repress something or whatever it is.
A lot of it's math and resonance. It's how many times you hear the same key in a chord.
I mean, you know, that's definitely probably even a brainwashing technique is how often you hear something if you're under duress when you're hearing it. And of course we never want brainwashing associated with any of this. But we were actually earlier talking about the distinction that people sometimes make between science and the metaphysical and how they'll separate them, entirely, where we're more on that, alchemic side where you can definitely bring them together.
Alchemy, the art of science and the science of art.
Yeah.
It's a good medium. Yeah. There's something to be said. I think where you limit your mind is where you will curse yourself.
And you know what's funny is we were watching the movie Doctor Strange, and that's actually a really good representation of what we're talking about.
Yes, incredibly in a sci-fi sort of aspect, but it rides the line of sci-fi a little much for me at times.
I don't think they were going completely metaphysical with it, and that's why it comes out more sci-fi because it comes out more mundane.
You know, I think and plus you have to reach a demographic. There's, you know, but I think that the end justifies the means in regards to that situation. Yeah. The one thing
there's a lot of good imagery in the movie too.
Yes. You know what? You speak of the imagery. I was actually about to bring that up. We're on the same wavelength as usual. One thing that I had loved, and most people watching this probably don't realize this, is so for all of you fans and who have seen this and remember this particular part, if you remember, I can't remember, truth be told, the woman's name, you know, the bald woman that was like, you know, the ancient one, yes.
She didn't have a name, that's all.
Yeah, so when, you know, I guess when, like, she, like, went
when
full
you
like
transcend like that, there's just why
you,
have a name,
you become the ancient one. All jokes aside, when she had you know, did open your eye and she like and she like thumbprinted him in the third eye, he started having that very intense vision. Now the one thing that was very straightforward that was dream symbolism, and this goes into any episode we've had about interpretation and dream symbolism and understanding artistic symbolism, how this all goes together, especially for our more left brain listeners who listen to this, I invite you to open, you know, your minds to understanding this from a different perspective, or maybe understanding it for the first time at all. The one part that stood out, a lot of the visions stood out, but the one that stood out the most was the fact that there were little hands all over the place, and those little hands started engulfing themselves into his entire body. And all the hands went and literally came together and then became Doctor Strange. But then Doctor Strange was frozen in time. He was locked in place. If you were paying attention earlier into the movie, since he lost his hands, hands are also a symbol in spirituality for control. And what was the biggest thing that the Ancient One made known to him very often is that you work so hard because of your fear of failure. And that is, you know, and that made you very obsessed with control. But your obsession with control is what has been limiting you and preventing you from control in the first place. Self-fulfilling prophecy, doing one thing and having the other happen. Everyone does it in their own way. It's the part of life that is the most wonderful and tediously annoying at the same time. But I'm more of a positive person than a cynical one.
Yes. And so, yeah, basically in order to gain control, you have to lose it. And really, just to say it again, that movie would actually be a very good representation for people, especially because Endgame just came out. So if you want to go, if you're going back and watching all the
if you want to be chronological,
yes, Definitely watch it for the scientific and metaphysical aspects of it too, beyond the comic book and the sci-fi version. Just kind of study it as if you're going to study it for, you know, the bridging of science and the metaphysical, because that's kind of what was going on with Doctor Strange the whole time. Is he was so used to being left brain and scientific that he was having a hard time opening his mind up to the metaphysical and things beyond science. But once he did, he really understood how things work together. And the Ancient One was telling him that basically you're so smart, but you're limiting yourself and you're never going to get where you want to be because you aren't willing to take in anything beyond the physical and beyond like pure science. And so it's actually a wonderful movie to see that realization, that enlightenment happen, and the power that he gets from it.
I would say pure modern understanding of science.
Fair enough.
Because
yeah,
these
no,
things
fair.
That are spiritual. I do.
Yes, no.
Science literally is everything. Like, there's we are very, listen, friends, we are very pro science.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
We are very on the edge of thinking that the ways of understanding are completely solidified right now. I think that's vainglory. I think it's pompous. I think it's fool's hardy. And the list can go on to think that we have everything possible to understand everything right now. And just because there were certain discrepancies or, you know, I don't know if we'll ever get to a point where there will be an absolute with understanding these things. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, like, I guess if you don't believe, you know, just sign a contract and I'll, you know, that absolves me of any moral thing. And I'll put some spirits in your house. Also the sacred geometry in that movie. There's a lot of it. Yes. If you really like understanding sacred geometry's relation to astrology, sacred geometry's relation to numerology and standard math. There's so much to be said.
Mm-hmm. So I think right now we're going to go to our commercial because I realize what time it is. And we will continue with your awesome explanations after that.
Yes.
Hi, and we're back. So we're going to continue talking about Beltane, and we had some associations. So we were talking about Beltane being associated with protection and prosperity and abundance and fertility.
I remember where I was. I was on protecting plants, animals, people, and possessions. Just a disclaimer, friends, we're driving to a radio interview that I will be I will obviously be interviewed on it, and I will also, it will be published at WRHU sometime this Tuesday for my music portion of my life and career. We were talking about protecting plants, animals, people, and possessions. So especially when you think of like plants and animals, there's also a good time to cast things for communications with animals, maybe with your pets, how to communicate better, maybe to embody some animalistic traits. Animal totem works would be a good thing to do during this time.
I'd just like to give a quick shout out to Marble Forest Podcast because they were listening to our spirit animal episode and they really liked it and found it very interesting. So if other listeners are interested, we could always continue that as well.
Very much so. If anyone wants to know about any specific spirit animals, we can certainly dive into them. In fact, one thing I think we should talk about is totem animals. Much like how there are primary signs in the zodiac sign and secondary signs and other things that affect you, same thing happens with the totem animal. I've been recently, you know, all of your friends could be totems, like I said, like our mutual spirit animals are each other's totems. I've also noticed the other totem animals that are in my life, like the goat. That one's definitely a big thing for me. Specifically the Alpine Ibex I'm quite fond of, but that's because they're adorable. They have a perfect combination of adorable, freaky, and powerful with those long horns.
They are.
So, protecting your plants. We usually do a giant gardening invigoring spell, you know, mm-hmm. kind of turn your garden into a place of power.
That almost got a little too much, because this year we, you know, have been looking at the garden to see what it's going to come back as and see how well it's doing. And things were starting to burst out of the garden already. And because of the way that seeds blew around, unfortunately, Ignatius's backyard is now chamomile and grass.
Oh, it's very interesting to say the very least.
At least we'll have lots of tea, I guess.
But, There's also the visiting of sacred wells. So, I mean, anything that surrounds well magic, you know. So by that logic, it's also things that have to do with the Fae or entities that are connected with wells and making offerings at wells.
I wish we still had some wells by us. I used to have one at my house, but I don't anymore.
Walking the boundaries of one's property, it's usually a good time to cast any sort of protection spells around the home.
Oh, yeah, and you can plant lamb's ear. Since we're talking about spring, that's a good protection border plant.
Yes, I'm quite fond of lamb's ear, and lamb is also, when you think about it, it's, you know, the big symbol of spring.
Yeah.
So, and also working with the Fae, making offerings to Fae. I know there are mixed views about the Fae in regards to what legend you read or your personal experience. I know the Fae likes to mess with Ignatius a lot, so...
Yeah, they do.
Obviously the astrological timing is obviously... related to Taurus. It's the coming time of Taurus.
Mm-hmm. And it's your birthday right after May Day.
Ah, yes, it is. I'm born on May 4th.
Okay.
No more Star Wars jokes, please. I prefer the Day of the Devil. The tarot card of the devil tends to fall on that day. Tends to fall in the archetype of the inside jokes rooted in seriousness in our coven. And I'm just, you know, the joke, you know, it got old.
On the May the 4th movie.
Yeah, no, it's just kind of, then I just imagine like Daffy Duck, you know, with like the, you know, or like Sylvester with like the lisps. May the 4th be with you, you know, like.
Well, at least that makes it funny.
Well, it kind of does, but like now I can't, like, it's just
too much for
it's
you.
Too much going on.
Fair enough.
All jokes aside, the sun at the 15 degrees of the Scorpio line in the southern hemisphere is also something to keep in mind, you know. So not only Taurus, but the antitheses on the zodiac wheel. While others tend to stick to May 1st out of tradition, others will wait for visible clues in nature, as we've stated with my other friends who have also do that one as well. It's a great time to work with Gaia. Obviously, Earth Day just passed, which is... this weird combination of secular and sacred, you know, for certain people, but you can certainly celebrate Gaia or any other spiritual earthly goddesses at this time. Ones associated with plants or animals. The maiden aspects and the maiden aspects coming into the mother aspects, young mothers, from the female archetype. And in the male archetypes, it's dying and resurrecting deities. So one could argue that you could actually do things surrounding Hades here, much like how you would sow in another particular, and, you know, on the other side of the wheel of the year.
It makes sense why Jesus is around this time with Easter and all that, because that is when he's resurrected, and, you know.
Fair enough, yes. The green man, the horned god, so you think Kernanos or any combinations of that, or if someone who, any of you who work with Baphomet, you can get like the more earthy sides of the Sabbatic goat. The lusty young god ready to fertilize the goddess of the earth with his seed. Sun deities. And that goes further into to midsummer when Letha happens.
So I think Apollo and Artemis would be a good pair.
Yes.
She's the maiden and he's the sun.
Actually, well, yeah, no, it's actually quite interesting. Well, I'm hoping they're not impregnating each other.
Well, I mean, they're Greek gods, so who knows, but...
but, yes, no, yeah, between the wild places...
Yeah, they're good representations of this time of year. What other gods and goddesses are associated with Beltane?
So if I go down the list, you can work with Aphrodite. You can work with Artemis, Astarte. All those are all Greek deities. Bonadei, Roman. Qinhua Fujian, a Chinese tutelary deity, Danu, which is Irish, Diana, which is Roman, Flora, also Roman, Freya, it's a Norse. Freya was actually in a pretty significant deity that we would work with around this particular time. We tend to celebrate, we look at entities like Venus. We tend to celebrate her more at like Veneralia, which is the beginning of April. So it's like April 1st, and like, you know, a lot of the Greek counterparts and the Roman counterparts share a lot of the similar dates, or at least similar months and similar times. But you can work with Venus around this time. Horae, which is Greek. Maia, also Greek. Prosperina, Roman. Rauni, which is Finnish. Sarasvati, a Hindu deity. Those were all particular goddesses you can work with. And now the gods, we were speaking about Apollo. It was obviously Greek and Roman. Apollo has no Roman counterpart. It's just, he just delighted in Rome.
Cool. Him, well, and it's interesting though, because Artemis's counterpart is Diana. So but interesting that one half of the twin got a counterpart, but not the other.
It was very interesting. And truth be told, the Romans say, oh, like the twin is Diana, the twin. So I honestly think that there are some deities that allied together because they are the same deities, or there are some deities that might be separate. Mm. So I guess it kind of depends. You decide through your own practice and logical deductions.
We'd be interested to hear, of course, who you focus on around this time, your viewpoints on deities, and, you know, whether the Roman and Greek are the same or different. And even if maybe you don't celebrate any deities, maybe you just kind of do your own thing. And that's cool. I want to know, well, we want to know the different ways that people celebrate Beltane, because there's no one way to do it. You don't have to necessarily pray to a deity or work with one.
We're giving you all-encompassing backgrounds. And again, we are referencing one of the books from Lulins, because it's very all-encompassing.
Yeah. It's just an idea. They give you guys an idea of all different ways to approach this holiday. But, you know, you just take from it what you want and what works for you and go from there.
So you can work with Baldur, which is the son of Odin and Frigg. Beel, Bel, or Belenos, also Celtic.
Beltane.
Yep. Kurnos, we spoke of. Shunkui, if I'm mispronouncing that, I apologize. I'm not too familiar with Chinese tutelary deities. The only East Asian spiritual philosophies I'm aware of is Taoism, Shintoism, and I mean, if you want, I suppose if you count backgrounds from India, India is technically a part of Asia.
So. Yeah, or like Buddhism. Yes. Yeah, you know, all different things.
Obviously, any horned god related deities. So we spoke of Baphomet before. Odin and his Germanic guys as Wotan.
You know, I'm starting to think that Odin just kind of puts himself in a lot of major holidays here, and he goes, yeah, this is a good time to celebrate me. And it's just like all year round.
Well, I mean, that's why a lot of like the Romans, you can, you know, Jupiter's in a lot of things. Jupiter in his many different monikers. I mean, like, most people don't know. You ever hear the phrase by Jove?
Yeah.
Jove is Jupiter.
What?
Yeah, Jove is Jupiter.
Wow.
Go figure. Huh. So it's always really like quite interesting when I hear like a Christian person say, by Jove, it's like, yes, by the pagan god.
And you know what's funny is I always notice that it's become such a colloquialism to just be like, oh my god, or like all that kind of stuff. Because even secular people that like have told me that they don't believe in like the Christian god or something will say it. And then you're like, oh, it's just a phrase now.
Well, that reminds me of an old story from like, I want to say, I believe it was Russell Peters.
Okay.
He was talking about a friend that he had. This is a comedian, folks. We strongly recommend comedy. Comedy is also, comedy and drama. Comedy and tragedy, right? Obviously, the great arts of the Greeks. Something we recommend because we understand magic by understanding those things. But he was talking about this man that was incredibly, incredibly Muslim. Incredibly Muslim. Very straight to the point. You know, Muhammad, Allah, you know, it's like intense, unwavering, but a really good friend nonetheless. And then something happened, like one day, I guess, like he like had a moment where like, I guess he almost like lost his life or something. And like, or I guess maybe he was being pulled out this, something happened where like, I guess he almost like fell and like killed himself. Something endangered his life. And he was like, oh God, Jesus Christ. Like, and then it was like, oh, it was that easy to kind of get you to not, to kind of switch sides, huh?
Oh my God.
It was just kind of funny, but obviously people, they say, Americans say he's an American. So obviously, like, Americans say Jesus Christ, like, constantly. It's become this,
Yeah, it's just it's become
the literal a names phrase. Have become the colloquialism. In
yeah,
and of
which
themselves.
Is so interesting to me.
Continuing on after the jokes. Obviously,
we're gonna have to drink every time you say now.
Yeah, I know. I've noticed. I've done that's today's week. See, I made fun of you guys, and now lately I've been the one doing it for the past 6 episodes. Pluto, Ra.
You're still doing it.
Hades.
Hades. You want to know why? Because Persephone is coming back to Earth, and he's bored. So yes. He needs friends.
To come and come to the upper world. The colors of this day, I have to do with brown, pink, green, white, and yellow, but richer versions of those colors because they're very similar
the pale
to spring.
From...
Yeah, not the pale pastels that exist in early spring, but the more richer versions of these colors. Brown obviously has to do with the energies of Earth in and of itself. In Earth, in the more primal states, you think of animals, family, protection, wealth, literally the idea of the pentacles from the tarot. Pink is obviously beauty, cooperation, it's romance, contentment, friendship, love, nurturing energies, very easy, gentle energies. White also has to do with lunar energies, purity, power, protection. It's also very universal. Also has to do with the innocence that exists within this time. Green has to do with abundance. You think more about certain types of wealth in regards to money. As opposed to brown being wealth in terms of possession and things that you value. Fertility, growth, health, life, prosperity, actual vegetation, etc. And yellow, communication, dream work, happiness, solar energies, the element of wind. And Beltane is a cross between wind and fire. It's going into fire. So working with those masculine tendencies, folks. I know certain people are afraid to work with masculine tendencies because they can bring certain literal intensities to your life that can be overwhelming, especially if you're on the opposite spectrum of where it is your energies lie. But all balance is good balance. Continuing on, the herbs for this time, we would think are...
Yay.
Oh, you want to state this one?
Mm-hmm. Well, I love herbs. So, lemon, energy, joy... love, prophetic dreams, and purification. And also, obviously, it's a yellow fruit. So that kind of goes along with the energy and that sunshine of this time of year. And lemon is really purifying, which is why it's in a lot of cleaning products.
You can also think that the phrase, when life gives you lemons,
yes.
You know, make lemonade. It makes a lot of sense with this time because you're really, this is like one of the first Sabbaths of the year where the weather is... usually truly gorgeous.
Yes.
So really taking advantage and taking the day and running with it. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm pretty sure lemons grow around this time, I want to say.
Yeah, it just depends obviously where you are. We can't grow them in our growing zone, but we're a little too far north for that. I mean, you might be able to make it work in a greenhouse, maybe, if you had like heaters and stuff, but I'm not sure. The other plants are mint, so... energy, healing, love, prosperity, protection, purification, renewal, and vitality. And mint is a very strong, powerful herb for a lot of things. For obviously cleaning up your digestion, your breath, which is also seated anyway. It's energizing. It's that strong masculine energy. There's mugwort, which is a new goal of mine to start growing that. Communication with spirits, divination, fertility, lust, and protection. And woodruff, protection, victory, and wealth.
Every time I hear that that particular herb, I'm taken aback by this brilliant professor that I had the privilege of working with at the Red River Lyric Opera in Texas, Copeland Woodruff. If by some chance you ever pass through this... shout out to you, my dear friend. You are quite a brilliant director to work with and a very nice man to boot, though I'll always remember his superstition about whistling in the stage. on the stage. Yeah, that was one thing that I was
that I did.
What's the superstition behind that?
Oh, okay. So actually, I think I told this in a past podcast, but I'll tell it again. Essentially, back in the day with certain types of theater, a lot of foreigners would be the ones to man the curtains, the sandbags, special set pieces, and they didn't understand certain words, she would whistle in a certain way. If you whistled at the wrong time, obviously, you would maim somebody.
Right.
So that's why they considered bad luck to do that on the stage.
Well, hey, you know what? If that theater's haunted, you're going to bring back some ghosts, so better safe than sorry.
Yeah, I know. What? Nothing happened. Everything was fine.
I guess, you know.
The worst luck was just... Like, I guess one time I fell asleep, like, mid-rehearsal, like, on stage while everyone was singing.
Oh,
I was
so
exhausted.
How do you do that?
I, you know, just the body was like, it's time to sleep, so I did.
I guess at least you're forced to be healthy in a way, because you're listening to your body.
Yeah. It wasn't that I wasn't into the music. The music's very intense. I fell asleep, actually, during the most intense part, truth be told.
You would.
Oh. But, yeah, Susanna.
Oh, excuse me, yawning. So, trees are birch, which is one of my favorite trees. They have fertility, protection, and purification. They'd be great for wands. So actually, a cool thing would be to have different kinds of wands for different Sabbaths, you know?
Yes, that actually is a thing.
Yeah.
Just different Sabbaths, different seasons, different things all together, or spells that have to do with those energies that are either projective, receptive, waxing, or waning.
Yeah, it would definitely make it more powerful, too, any spell work that you did during this time. Hawthorn. There's fairy magic, fertility, defense, happiness, luck, and protection. Oak.
Obviously, when we think the Oak King, the Oak King is preparing for his death. Come the time of summer, he will be defeated by the Holly King.
Mm. He and that plant are associated with courage, energy, fertility, luck, magic, protection, security, and strength. A lot of protection happening here. Pretty sure if you had all these herbs, you'd be fine. Pine is abundance, energy, fertility, prosperity, purification. And the willow, another one of my favorite trees. Communication with spirits, healing, love, lunar energies, prophetic dreams, and protections.
Fair enough.
Yes. So a lot of good herb magic that you can do during this time of year. I mean, and why wouldn't you? It's spring.
Now we'll talk about flowers. We'll get more specific. There's still, you know, herbs, flowers. The daisy, which has to do with attraction. Elf and fairy magic. Love and youth. I'm quite fond of daisies. They're one of my favorite
daisies
flowers.
Daisies are pretty. Oh, my daisies are coming back, so I can't wait.
No, if you recall, if you remember, which daisy is my favorite?
Are you asking me?
Yes, I'm testing you live.
Well, is it something yellow?
I don't know. Why don't you tell me? Yes, I love yellow daisies.
Yes, I know.
Yellow daisies.
Because yellow's your favorite color.
Yellow daisies, marigolds, yellow roses.
Mm.
Anything that's really gold.
They are pretty.
But those, but the
flowers. Do you like daffodils then?
Actually, okay, so.
Too bright?
Too conish. You're the ones who like the conic.
You don't like cones?
The cone phallic looking flower. Not that I don't like them. Listen, I love all flowers.
Oh, well, but I'm just saying.
I love the ones that are very swirled and layered. It's a commentary.
Flat.
It's a commentary. No, it's a commentary on how I feel emotions. How I kind of enjoy love.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the way that they feel texture-wise when you follow the swirls
the
that exist within flowers like that. Yeah, no, there's something about it that's very, it's very calming, and I'm certain Freud would have a field day analyzing that.
And why I like cone-shaped things.
Ivy. Not poison ivy. Please don't make a laurel crown of poison ivy.
Oh, no.
I mean, if you do that, it would be hilarious, but...
not for...
We don't recommend it. Ivy is obviously for divination. It's a big one. Friendship, love, luck, marriage, rebirth, and security. You can actually, truth be told, you can actually use ivy as a way to continue with the year and a day marriage that we spoke of earlier in this episode. Or anything that relates to types of cord magic and cord binding. It's a very organic way to do anything that's like not magic related or cord magic related. We're continuing on.
Oh, lilies.
Yep, the Lily of the Valley.
A lot of people's favorite.
The number one thing they think of with the Lily of the Valley are two particular things. Healing in tandem with peace through healing, and desire.
So mixing this with a couple of the more fiery herbs could create a really lusty spell.
Ooh.
There's the rose, obviously, with blessings, clairvoyance, love, protection, and friendship. And, of course, the violet.
Oh, violets.
The calming, fertile love, protection, and prophetic dreams. So the violets are a little bit more higher when it comes to evoking love, you know, and invoking love. And the other flowers are a bit more about the lower tendencies.
Oh, and you know, it's funny, all the ones that I really like have to do with like psychic work.
And all the ones I tend to like are very much rooted in that.
We need the opposites.
Well, it certainly makes sense. The metals are copper. Copper usually has to do with Venus, has to do with the heart chakra, prosperity, well-being, and energy. There's gold because of the sun, and silver because it's the last bit of that energy before it's the summer when it's completely, strictly the sun's energy on the longest day of the year.
And crystals and stones for all you crystal witches out there and people that like to work with them. The bloodstone, one of my favorites, is about abundance, healing, love, passion, wealth, courage. Wealth, I mean, it's green, you know, so that's associated with that. Bloodstone is also really good for blood disorders. And, you know, it's in the name, and that health, that definitely deep-rooted sort of healing. Emerald. So maybe a little harder to get your hands on that, but...
obviously, the month of May.
Yes, birthstone.
There's an old, I believe there's... I might have said this before. We've been doing this podcast for almost a year now.
Almost.
There's an old legend with the emerald. If someone's wearing an emerald and they tell you a lie, the emerald will turn dark and cloudy.
Ooh, it's like a mood ring. Yes.
So the shinier the emerald, usually...
The purer the heart.
The purer the heart, yes.
Well, they have a lot of emeralds in the clatter rings, and I like those.
So you can see mine from space, is what I'm saying.
Wow. Emeralds are associated with luck. I mean, Irish luck, all that kind of stuff. Love, prosperity, protection, and more wealth, because green. There's also rose quartz, which is friendship, love, nurture, and union. So get those crystals out and get ready to work and add them to all your other spell work and herb magic.
Yes, be sure to charge them all day in the Beltane sun.
Yeah.
Incense, we think frankincense, jasmine, lemon, mint, pine, rose, woodruff, lang lang. The tarot symbolism to take in mind for today is the magician, the high priestess, the empress, and the emperor. So the male and female archetypes respectively.
Yeah, so definitely if you do any divination on Beltane, look out especially for those cards.
Very much so. Also... remember the maypole. For those of you who don't, we obviously have to talk about the maypole. So we've taken part in the maypole before. More of the people that were helping with the spell, not the ones...
Yeah, I was not inside the ribbons.
No, essentially, thanks. What goes on, friends, when you do the maypole, usually a man or sometimes a woman, depending on if there's an absence of a man, if people want to do it together, it's kind of become a little more universal in this day and age. But the pole is a very phallic thing, so symbolism surrounding male fertility as opposed to female fertility, but can work either way, depending on what it is you're trying to attract and what it is you're trying to do. Help you visualize. So for those who are trying to be fertile and birth something, visualize what it is, you know, just being fertile at the very least, or being fertile and imagining and helping shape the ideal energies you would like to attract in your child as possible, depending on how specific you want to get with it. And you stand in the middle of the maypole, and everyone has an opposite... what's the word I'm looking for? Not a strand.
Ribbon?
A ribbon, yes. Everyone grabs it. It's over, under. Everyone goes over and under each one. If you just went over, you could then go under and then vice versa. And you keep going around and around and around until the people who wish to, or the person or people who wish to be fertile and get pregnant, they also are wrapped with the particular mage, the witch, who is... overseeing this spell and being a focal point to it. And when everyone is wrapped, they sit there, they embrace that energy, and then they release it. So that was actually one of the traditions that was carried over into Catholicism and secular things as well. It's just kind of a fun thing to do. But very intense nonetheless. The foods for this time are breads and honey. drinks are things like lemonade and brighter wines. Very simple. And there are also many different recipes for brighter types of stew. We actually have, for the past few years, have done a particular Beltane-style stew. We're going to variate it this year and do a few other things. So, there are protection rituals, purification ceremonies, nature walks, making offerings to specific deities that we mentioned, lighting bonfires. The bonfire is very important for this Sabbath. If you light a bonfire for any Sabbath, let it be this one. Decorating the May bush, distributing May baskets, making your own May baskets or your own May Day boxes or your Beltane boxes, in which you put specific spells on for things that you want or things that you're trying to invoke or evoke. And obviously feasting, revelry. This is also a really powerful time for sex magic if you want to get into the intensities that surround that. Using the voice chakra in particular, and visiting wells and making offerings to the Fae, or even getting well water to use for holy water. There are these things to keep in mind.
Yes.
We're going to give you a few different ritual ideas and tell you essentially what we're doing. Like I said, we're gardening all day. We're going to be tilling, adding in new plants, harvesting the ones that have already started to grow. And then we will do a garden blessing, in which we will circle our gardens and imbue them with the power that they need. We are also trying to not only give that power for the garden to grow, but it also will be an offering and a dedication to a specific deity, to specific entities, and we will also be turning the garden also into a place of power to draw on. Because we've noticed in the past that when it has excessive energy, everything kind of goes crazy. The most nuts thing that happened was, I mean, everything was very overgrown. And the one thing that was incredibly over the top, quite literally and figuratively, was our tomato plants were so high that they were breaking the things, you know, the metal stands that keep them up. It was very unusual. I'd never seen anything like that before. So, but it certainly was a reassurance. Let me see. I'm just going to find the page real fast, friends. Just would like to do some, yes, rituals and celebrations. We'll give you some from the book, how we see them and how we'll variate them, and then we'll probably finish up the recording.
Okay, yeah. I mean, honestly, going back to the beginning and even just saying this is one of my favorite holidays, so anything and everything to do with Beltane is just, I want to do everything. But, I mean, we do start really early and go late into the night, so we try to do our very best. Oh my God, wow, I just, dyslexic moment, very best, that was weird, to include all of the things that we've mentioned so far, and when you are doing your own rituals and everything, you can include multiple deities, you know, just give them the relative honor and respect that they deserve, don't shortchange anyone, but we include multiple ones at a time, and I think Freya might have a little extra essence in this year's celebrations. We're just kind of leaning towards her, and we will actually, on Beltane, have some extra content for our Patreon supporters. This is actually going to come out early for them. And then it's going to be coming out after Beltane, even though, you know, you can celebrate all week. But technically out after Beltane for all the other listeners. And on Beltane, we're also going to have special Snapchat stories and stuff for the Patreon members. They can see what we're going to be doing to celebrate the day, even though we only have a few hours.
But yes, I'll keep it short, simply so we can move along efficiently, because this is a long version of our podcast, but all for good reason. It's also because it's been broken up.
Yes.
The jumping of the fire is a very interesting thing to do. You can jump the fire and make one particular wish that you would like to accomplish by the end of the year. Or you can jump the fire with your lover at the same time to do one of or all of these things. Create more fiery passion, create more balance that's rooted in passion,
to solidify the marriage of the year in a day, to invigorate something that might have been lost, to activate and illuminate things that each other needs to talk or speak about that have been hidden from each other for quite a long time. So if you're having a couple troubles and you want to kind of illuminate the sides of each other's stories that need more clarity in order to understand each other and to transcend, that's another thing to do. Jumping over the fire has a wide variety of things, but make sure you're both visualizing this a similar outcome.
And you're not wearing a really long skirt or something.
Yeah, don't do that.
You could also bring blessings to your cattle. I don't know. Either way. And the jumping of the fire, I did last year. It was fun. You know, and it's just a cool way to celebrate that intention and that wish and what you're looking forward to. And coupling that with the maypole, 1 year we're going to have our own and not have to go to another festival to have a maypole. I'd really like to do that.
One day we'll actually, yes, we'll be able to do it.
That's one of my favorite things to do is run around with the ribbon, and I will never be in the middle unless it's like when I'm ready.
Until it's time.
But I'm not going to say never, but I currently am not ready to be in the middle of that. So we will take any volunteers that want to be in the middle so we can still have lots of fun.
This day in particular is also a really good time to attune your emotions, your mind, and everything with the natural ebb and flow of nature and the earth to get more in tune. Now, I will say, everything comes at its price, my friends. Now, when it gets certain types of weather, you will be affected. You will feel the highs and lows. Mm. But there's something to be said about being synchronized with the earth's energies in that regard.
I think it's
it'll amplify everything it is you're doing. Right. Oh, yes. No, I live with it. I've been living with it for years, and it's absolutely fantastic. Some of us are more predisposed to it than others, but anyone can come together and feel it. We have a dear friend who has been feeling that a lot. He used to be an atheist. Now I think he sees things in a very different way. So, atheist in the sense of like he had no belief whatsoever. Not like people use that word very interchangeably a lot. Not that there's anything wrong. There are witches that are necessarily atheists that believe it's more of a science aspect. Mm. Not necessarily saying anything. Just to clarify that, friends.
Yes.
It's just there was a different mindset. He's opened his mind up to something new.
Yes, which is wonderful. And that's a big goal of ours in general, and we want to open our minds more, learn more about different things. If you have comparable celebrations to Beltane from your culture and your beliefs, please let us know. Again, we try to celebrate as many holidays as possible. It can get a little overwhelming, so sometimes, you know, we'll pick certain years for certain things. But again, let us know, because we really definitely want to celebrate that. This is also a good time for guided meditations, especially grounding meditations. I feel a lot during meditation that people often experience that heavy feeling in their body, like almost like they're sticking to the mat or the floor or wherever they're laying down. And so that's grounding. That's a good way to really absorb that energy of the earth, get in that cycle, you know, feel the earth cycle. And you can also do guided meditations about things related to plants. So today I did one about pretending you're an acorn and then like feeling the roots come out and sprouting, and it was really good.
The growth exercise, yes, as opposed to being a tree altogether and just absorbing. So
yes,
different symbolism to keep in mind.
Yes, I really enjoyed it. And actually, I felt this heaviness in my feet when they were talking about the roots, and also felt the bottom half of my body be cold, like that cold dampness that the earth feels like when you dig into it, and the water and all that. And the top half of my body felt warm because I was imagining the top half being the plant that broke through the surface with the leaves and feeling the warm sun. So it was really a cool sensation to feel my body half cold and half hot.
Yes, that is absolutely lovely. I'm glad you're having more success with that.
Thank you.
To finish up with some of the rituals, there's the ritual where you can go outside and collect the dew water in the morning.
And
you can use that one also to make holy water.
Yes, and the dew is supposed to be good for women. You're supposed to go out and kind of like wash your face with the dew, and it's supposed to help you with your natural beauty.
Yes, accentuate your natural beauty and wane away any self-thought imperfection, so to speak. There are particular
types of spells that surround really all parts of this day. There are things to do for, let's say, the heart chakra, simply because if you're going through the wheel of the year, if you're going through the wheel in with eight, this is the Sabbath that deals with that particular chakra and everything that surrounds it. Hence also why when you think of the green, the copper, Venus and Aphrodite, you know, the air and the wind, it's when all of these things are starting to intersect. Hence why it's a Sabbath that is between two seasons. This one is a quick one. A Beltane vigor and youth ritual for groups, partners, or solitaries. This is pretty all-encompassing. Let me see. This is something for people who are new to this or people who are trying to do something that's quicker that doesn't necessarily take a lot of
time and effort.
Yes, well, no, I wouldn't say, you know, effort. I don't like to say effort, but effort in the sense of exhausting yourself.
Pre-planning.
The purpose of this ritual is to renew youth and to restore vigor by attuning Beltane's energetic current of fertility, growth, and creation. In the daytime, usually early morning when the ground is still wet. You don't need any supplies for this. Wear something that you wouldn't mind rolling around on the ground with. Sit or lie on the ground and make contact between your skin and the earth. Stroke the vegetation with your hands, petting the leaves or blades of grass slowly and gently, and let the vegetation slide between your fingers. This person liked to use the word vegetation.
Well, because it could be anything. It could be grass or flowers or wherever you happen to be.
Basically, you're basically rolling and getting all the dew from the ground on you, and then going into visual meditation and allowing yourself to grow like a flower. The small incantation says, like the plants of the earth, like this fresh morning dew, I am healthy and growing, youthful and new. Okay. Say that, you can say that 3 times, 7 times, 12 times. Find the synchronicities of the numbers of incantation. When the ritual is complete, expect a feeling of renewal, a jolt of energy. This is a good thing to do at the start of the day because it'll give you the energy to do all that hard labor if you're doing what it is we're doing. This other ritual, which is centered around, here's a big one, love. Everyone wants love. Improve their ability to attract, express, and manifest love. This setting is more for nighttime. Obviously, preferably outdoors, by a wooded area, or even near a body of water. This would be a good thing to do in front of a well. Candles for each participant. Plus one more, a candle holder for each. Any colors of the candle are fine, but red and pink are best because they are in tune with loving, romantic vibrations. Mm. Now, if you want to attract a specific type of love that you attract, attach to a specific color, if you want the love to be rooted in something, that's something also to keep in mind. Jasmine oil, rose oil, or patchouli oil, pure natural essential oils, obviously no synthetics, would be something to anoint your third eye, your heart, and the sacrum above your, you know, above your groin, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, I just totally blanked.
Between your belly button.
Yes. And also even anointing the candles. Small pieces of notepaper and pens and blue ink, enough for everyone to have a pen and several sheets of paper. 2 cups filled halfway with water, 2 wands, and a bell. Dress in clothing that makes you feel sensual or good-looking. So bring, I'm not saying necessarily show up in something scantily clad, but something that...
Whatever your favorite outfit is, honestly.
Pretty much. Well, I mean, your favorite outfit could be something that's constricting. I would recommend something that's a bit more flowing. Oh. Like a sundress. Shades of white, pink, and green are usually very suitable. Let me see. Now, you obviously have the campfire, and we'll draw mainly on that with the power of the deities. But if not, place an additional candle in the center of the ritual space if you can't start a bonfire. In the circle surrounding it, place the candle holders. Beside the campfire, a great center candle, or great center candle, excuse me, place the 2 cups, the 2 wands, and the bell, the notepaper, and pens, and the essential oil. Give 1 candle to each participant and then select a person to lead the ritual. Usually I tend to do
those mm-hmm. kind of things in our rituals, though everyone is welcome to do whatever. I'm noticing that the dynamic is I tend to oversee the overall dynamic, and everyone adds to it, certainly, and then goes their own way, which is great. You also need 3 additional volunteers to aid in the summoning of powers that it takes to be in place with this ritual. So, again, it always helps, but you can do this as a solitary. Everyone stands in the circle. You can make a circle inside the circle you have drawn. Then have the person chosen as the ritual leader to walk around the circle, ringing a bell. As you do so, participants should focus on the ringing sound of the bell, envisioning a space clearing of any negativity, synchronizing with the overtones. The ritual leader should then make a second pass around the circle ringing the bell, this time with the intent of infusing the area with positive vibration. Incantation is also good at this time, uniting on a particular type of incantation. Like, you could say, I'm synchronized with the ring of the bell or something of that nature, or our magic is open and flowing. This circle fills with energy, anything of that nature. Next, the ritual leader and the 3 pre-selected volunteers should pick up a cup or a wand, coming to the center of the circle where the other participants can see what's going on. The wands are raised high in the air. The ritual and the participants focus on drawing down into the wands an active, assertive masculine energy. If desired, specific deities or gods can obviously be invoked. The 2 people with the wands then touch the wands together in docking-like fashion. Mm-hmm. keep your innuendo as clean as possible, friends.
Thank you, Homance, for explaining that, by the way, in one of their episodes.
The 2 people with the wands... Oh, yeah, I said that already. Forming an X and then switching their position so that the wand is now in front, forming the X again.
Okay.
Then say the incantation, scepter to scepter. We welcome the energies of... insert deities here, or higher powers, etc., etc. The active principle, the seed, the animus. Enter here, join us now. Make sure if they're deities, though, that they are obviously male ones. Phallic energy is the symbolism we're going for. Next, the 2 people holding the cups at the center stage have their cups raised high in the air, and the ritualist concentrate on drawing down into the cups a more passive, nurturing, feminine energy, obviously emphasis on the vagina versus water. The penis. Very straightforward, friends. You can also, instead of cups, you can use small bowls, really anything that's a vessel.
Yeah.
The 2 people holding the cups. You can invoke at this point specific deities to be invoked for obviously some of the goddesses that we have said. The 2 people holding the cups then take turns pouring a bit of water into the other person's cup. The big thing to keep...
changing that.
Yes.
Energy.
The big thing, and creating a yin-yang effect. Mm-hmm. Also a push-pull. And also a balancing act. Mm-hmm. And a figure 8, if you will. The biggest thing that is evoked here, what I usually think of, friends, in that particular part of the ritual, is the card Temperance, with the angel pouring each bit of water back and forth. I would strongly recommend you bless this holy water before you do it to invigorate the energies. And then the people holding the cups will say, cup to cup, or bowl to bowl, vessel to vessel. We welcome the energies of the insert deities, a deity or deities here that are feminine, the subtle principle, the nurturer, the womb, the anima. Enter here now, join us here now. And again, say that enough until you feel that ring in the air. You'll know it, friends. Next, the 2 people with the wands should come forward and plunge their wands into the cup, one in each. The wand is then moved in a clockwise motion, while the other is moved in a counterclockwise motion, causing the water in the cups to swirl. The ritual leader and their 3 volunteers say in unison, scepter to cup or scepter to vessel, etc., etc. We acknowledge the sacredness of all creation. We welcome love and light in all its multiple and many forms, or something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have to be word for word, friends.
The volunteers then return to their original places in the circle. Next, the ritual leader will pick up the essential oils, make his or her way around the circle, anointing the participants on the palms, the wrists, the chest, and the forehead. As this is done, they should envision the loving vibration of the oil seeping into the pores of their body in which they were anointed. The hands, obviously, symbolize. Your ability of creation, your chest being your heart, your palm, your wrists being the connection between creation and where the creative power stems, and the forehead is obviously your third eye. Envision what it is you want in general in regards to attracting loving energies and raising that vibration. Visualize the aura around you filling and growing individually, and filling and growing as a group, filling and growing in the circle in general. And then you can envision what it is you would maybe like specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And then keep with that energy a while. Stay meditative for a while. The leader will then... will an intention. As a ritual leader anoints the participants and fills each one with a filling... With a feeling of radiating love and beauty, they say to each person, you are love, you are beautiful, you are loved, and you are loved. You are love. It's starting with you are love, and it ends with you are love. The push, the pull, the yin, the yang. Once again, the poles. You say it to yourself, and then you say it to each person in the circle. Much like how Christians do the peace be with you.
Ah, yes.
Right before... Was it that's before or after the Lord's Prayer? Why am I blanking?
Andrew.
It is after the Lord's Prayer. Okay. Which is a beautiful thing which I believe should be done in any sort of setting.
Connect you to the people you're worshiping.
Yes. Yeah, how can you see God? How can you see God in or the higher powers in their purest of forms if you can't even see them in each other?
Mm-hmm.
A good lesson to learn from all backgrounds of spirituality, but in this particular context, obviously the Catholics, by what it is I just referenced. Once everyone has been anointed, the final person in the circle will anoint the ritual leader. Then the ritual leader can turn the oil into its place near the center of the candle and campfire. The ritual leader circles the center of the candle or the campfire three times, envisioning the loving energy that is growing, swirling. Really a lot of energy manipulation paired with what it is you're trying to do. He or she then stops, holding his or her hands safely above the flame, saying, by great Beel's fire, and so, you know, Beel fire or bonfire, mm-hmm. You know, that particular word, or by the great power of the inferno, however poetic you'd like to get with it, we empower our desire with the powers of creation, with the energies of inspiration or the powers to inspire. By the powers here that be, we manifest all that we see. Our light draws love, and our love draws light. We'll get just what we will tonight. Over and over and over again, say that circling prayer rune. The ritual leader then gently taps one of the participants, signaling to them to go to the center of the circle that's burning brightly. Excuse me, my nose. The participant then carefully lights their own candle from the central fire.
Mm.
Or what you do is you can take out a stick, you know, the stick. You take part of the central fire and then you'll light the candle,
yes.
You know, to avoid, you know, burning the candle too much or burning yourself. Then this is a good time to visualize again what it is you would want with love, romance, or love in general, whatever it is you're going for in the archetype.
Mm-hmm.
The participants notice... the other participants, including the ritual leader who has been taken up in the place in the circle, observe the ritualist standing in the center. This is a time where not only we focus on our own individual things, but if anyone's been honest with each other, we can help them focus on what it is they want. You aid each individual person's magic, and then when you're done, you'll aid that next person's magic in the group with everyone else. It's basically helping each other's magic go along as much as yourself. As above, so below.
Mm.
And, all for one, one for all.
Yes.
The participants Observe the ritualist standing in the center. The participants notice admirable, appealing, and attractive traits about the person who is standing and lighting their candle. Shouting them as the inspiration comes. So you can be as poetic or really as crude and straightforward as you wish. If you notice something about the person, this is the time to say it without any sort of reservation. Mm-hmm. So if you see someone, if they have nice eyes, nice legs, nice breasts, a nice dick, you know, if
equal
I'm
equal opportunity.
Equal opportunity of all sorts, a stunning jawline, point it out, accentuate it. Yes. Yes, affirm it. Oh, yes, no, of course.
Your artistic appreciation.
Yes, don't be offensive if you don't think a person would appreciate it. You know, use selective wit and discernment, friends. But that's essentially the idea. Or even affirmations like, you are worthy of love, you are beautiful on the inside and out.
Mm-hmm. And this is something that's great to do, I mean, even outside of this ritual setting, just to have that affirmation in the beginning of your day, the end of your day.
Remember, always keep it genuine. Don't say anything that doesn't come naturally. Mm-hmm. Because then other things can start to come, friends. And we don't want to build malocchio if something isn't... if something isn't right, or if something's rooted in envy, or something that's not necessarily forthcoming. Make sure to bless everything you say, as you say it. At the leader's signal, the participants then hold their hands out, open palms toward the ritualist who stands holding the candle in the center of the circle. The participants will conjure a feeling of love in their hearts and minds, letting it radiate throughout the body, and then out through the hands, directly into the ritualist, to the center. Courtney, would you be able to read the rest of this? Because my voice is just getting a little tired.
Sure.
And I have to do a lot of singing this week.
Yes.
I'll come back in a brief moment, friends.
Yes.
So continuing from the midway of the top paragraph of this grimoire.
So imagine the energy you're directing as a glowing, tinted light, and charge that light with as much emotion as you can muster. Again, you know, we always bring back to intention. So just keep in mind what it is you're looking for, what you're intending, and what you want to get out of this. Once participants have filled the center ritualist with this extra bit of love power, quote unquote, that person then places their candle in one of the candle holders at the center and returns to their place in the circle. A new ritualist then takes their place near the center candle or campfire, lighting their own candle from that central flame, and repeats the process of that previous person. So it could be personal goals of romantic wishes, creative goals, receiving accolades and compliments. And then also when you're in the center, just absorb that loving energy, the accolades from your peers, and just kind of really enjoy being there. Then receiving, you'll receive the loving energy from the people around you. Then that person would place their candle on one of the holders and return to the circle. So another ritualist can have their return in the center. So basically you're swapping in and out with all the people in the circle. And this includes the ritual leader as well. Now, once everyone's finished at the fire, you're all going to be in a circle and join hands. A feeling of love is center on the circle, projected from hand to hand, beginning and ending with the ritual leader. There's kind of a theater game that's similar to this, where you like squeeze people's hands and it's supposed to go around the circle.
Yes, the munch.
Yes.
Brings me back to the blue masks.
Yes, it's a fun game, but this is kind of like that, except without the squeezing motion. You're just imagining love and light and that healing energy.
Visualizing.
What did I say?
You said imagining. I'm being a little semantic right now, but visualization, I feel, is a little more all-encompassing than simply imagining.
Fair enough. So visualizing that love and energy and the light that you're sending around the circle. So it's very much like what the squeezing hand thing is supposed to mimic, like an electrical current. So this is similar. If you like, you can also send loving energy around the circle with a kiss rather than holding hands, or just pass a kiss around the circle from cheek to cheek. Or I guess the people that are more adventurous, you can kiss each other on the lips. Depends on how close you are with this group of people. Once the loving energy has been raised satisfactorily, it's time for the next step. At the ritual leader's signal, everyone holds their hands towards the central fire, palms open, and projects that same loving energy, but into the flames. And as that happens, the ritual leader says, "By love, by fire, by you, by me, by God, by goddess," or whatever you insert in that space, whatever deity, "what we will, it will be." So, by love, by fire, by you, by me, by God, by goddess, what we will, it will be. The heart of the ritual is now completed, so spend time socializing with the people in the circle. Talk openly about romantic feelings, wishes, and share creative ideas and aspirations. Use the note, paper, and pen to write down short notes for one another, perhaps offering compliments or invitations for romantic adventure. The candles and/or campfire can now be extinguished, or if you're hanging around for a while, you can let them burn out on their own. Expect love and creativity to notably flourish in the lives of all the participants, beginning immediately upon conclusion of the ritual and for continuing as long as several weeks or more, depending on the strength of the ritual and the effort of those involved. So, I think that's a really interesting and wonderful group ritual. So we kind of covered solitary, partners, groups, and this way there's a little something for everyone to celebrate.
There are many more rituals, friends, but you know, for the sake of this is, you know, another Beltane recording. We will be doing more of this next year when we speak about it.
Yes. There's always more to learn. We're going to come up with new things ourselves. Hopefully we share things with you guys and you share things with us, so this way we can include some of your things.
Yeah, please tell us what you're doing for Beltane by all means.
Mm-hmm. Or what you did, because probably by the time it comes out, people have mostly celebrated by then.
Yes.
Unless they're like us and it's on the weekend.
Well, if they're also going by the weather or certain things, some people might not celebrate Beltane until literally the week after.
Yeah. So, you know,
it's a good place. Good place to end. We've given you almost 2 hours.
Yeah, it's an extra long episode, so we hope that you guys enjoy it. And again, thank you so much, as always, for listening, for supporting us, for taking this now more than an hour out of your life to listen to the things that we have to say and the things that we care about and love, and it really means a lot to us. So extra special thanks to everyone that's rated and reviewed us on iTunes and wherever they listen, shared with friends, supports us on Patreon, and listens. We really do appreciate each and every one of you, and it's amazing that we have over 13,000 downloads now. Honestly, that is a big deal. The podcast is almost a year old. It's going to be a year old on May 18th, and it really means a lot that we have so many people interested in what we have to say, and we've built this really big community. If you want to join our online community, you can join us on Facebook, on the Spellcast Podcast private group. There's also a Spellcast Podcast page. We're on Instagram at Witchy Page and Twitter at Spellcast Pod. Feel free to join any and all of those groups. We would really love to see you there. And the Spellcast Podcast group is a really great group of people. We share a lot of awesome stuff, and I feel like we are really close with one another. And it's a safe space, so you can feel free to share anything personal or, you know, whatever you're comfortable with. Even fun memes or pictures, we're into everything. We love it all. And if you'd like to join us on Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/spellcast. And we have different tiers. You can donate to the show. Show us your love in that aspect, and you get extra bonus kickbacks from us. So you get bonus content, access to special groups, access to the Spellcast Coven Facebook page on Instagram and Snapchat as well. And if you are not able to donate on Patreon, have no fear. The way to show us some love too is to rate and review on iTunes and just talk about us with your friends. You can write us messages. If you want to contact us, you can either private message us, DM us, or even contact us, witchypage@gmail.com. So we hope to hear from you soon. And if you have any fun listener stories or you'd like to include the story of what you did on Beltane or any holidays, whatever your holidays are that you celebrate, if you'd love to share that with us, we'd love to have it on a listener's episode and we'd love to share it with other people. And as always, let us know if you would like to remain anonymous or not. We will respect that, of course. So thank you all for tuning in, and we just want to say thank you, and we hope that you enjoy and or have enjoyed your Beltane celebrations. So, until the next time, remember, there's Little Witch in all of us.
And normally the spirits live in the mirror, but for Beltane, they live in the bonfire.